Great. Marty, let me echo the comments of Larry and Jamie, thanking you for giving us the opportunity to weigh in on such an important issue. It's interesting listening to the comments of Larry and Jamie, a lot of common themes, and I think you'll hear more of that in what I'm going to say over the next few minutes. I'll say at the outset that I've got the greatest respect for the FASB, the IASB, and the staffs, and they've taken on a monumental challenge in getting these convergence projects done. And so I don't believe for a second that the boards would, you know, issue standards that they believed were less than high quality. I've heard it with Larry today. Had the opportunity to hear that directly from Bob Herz over the last week. So the intentions is really not the issue. I think the boards have all the right intentions in issuing high quality standards. The issue is more about, we talked about redoubling efforts. You can talk about redoubling efforts, retripling efforts. Efforts is not the problem. Okay, the boards are working incredibly hard. The staffs are working incredibly hard. The issue is, I think, capacity in the system, as Larry acknowledged and as Jamie mentioned in her comments as well. When you talk about, you know, the history, you look at the history. You know, you go back to 2001, and there were four standards issued in 2001, the previous record for the FASB. You could argue that two of those standards were really the same standard, so it's more like three. If you look at the nature of those standards, while there was some complexity there in business combinations, if you compare it to what we have today, leases, revenue recognition, financial instruments, just the qualitative aspects of the standards that are being proposed as well as the number. So we're more than doubling the record, you know, in the time frame, in a similar time frame. And that certainly raises, you know, our concerns around the quality of those standards. Again, not that there would ever be an intention of issuing anything other than high-quality standards, but you don't know what you don't know. And without the system being able to provide input in a robust way, because there will be input. I think everybody's going to take a shot at providing input, you know, to the FASB and to the IASB. But it's the quality of that input. Do people really have the time? Do companies have the time to invest in really wrapping, you know, their best resources around these very complicated standards and providing the inputs that's necessary to really issue high-quality standards? And I would say even in the best of times, the runway here is too ambitious, but these aren't the best of times. You know, companies have reduced their staffs to manage through a tough economy and to manage cost. And while there is the capacity to deal with some level of standard setting, and there should be, and there is, you know, trying to set a record in this environment is really the wrong way to go in my mind. And I understand that, you know, even if you cut back to two or three of these, you know, in a year or a year and a half, that would be incredibly ambitious. So at the end of the day, I do understand the pressure as it relates to timing. I think Larry talked about it in his comments. You know, there's certainly political pressure in Europe to get done. Convergence is a dirty word in Europe, especially when you go beyond June 2011. For the reasons Larry stated, you do have turnover at the board level. I think the one I find more compelling is the fact that you have a number of countries that are adopting IFRS, and it would be unfortunate if they have to adopt and then have to redo all these standards again. I mean, that's very unfortunate. But at the end of the day, high-quality standards, you know, should be the primary goal, and I just fundamentally don't believe that there's sufficient time to get the input necessary to produce high-quality standards. So, you know, that's relating to the standard-setting process, and I think as companies try to comment during this period, it will be a significant distraction, bringing this back to what it means for auditors. It will be a distraction. And at the end of the day, I don't think, even with that distraction, companies will be able to provide the input necessary that the FASB and the IASB really need to produce high-quality standards. As it relates to implementation, I think because if these standards are produced in this time frame, because the time frame is so compressed, we're going to find out a lot as companies try to implement the standards that we otherwise would have found out during the standard setting process. And so the concern I have around that is we may end up, you know, similar to in previous standards, when you implement the standards, you find out there are operational issues, you end up revising the standards, deferring the standards, and the concern there is the credibility of the standard setting process if we end up redoing a number of the standards because of a very compressed time frame during the standard setting process. Jamie mentioned it, and Larry mentioned it. Yeah, certainly there is a much greater degree of judgment that's pervasive in these new standards, financial instruments being the obvious one, the greater expansion of level three valuations, for sure will introduce more judgment. Not saying that's a bad thing. It's just, it's going to, you know, the system is going to need to adapt to that. And people will need to put in, you know, different systems, processes, controls to make sure that those judgments are made in the appropriate way within an appropriate band. Similar leasing, you know, just getting, you know, a company getting their arms around the population of leases will be an incredible challenge. And depending on whether this is retrospective or prospective in the adoption, I mean, it really is going to be a monumental task. Other matters with respect to judgment relating to leasing, and Larry mentioned it during his remarks, you know, what is the lease term, contingent rentals, so there will be more judgment there. You know, revenue recognition, you know, certainly I think it is a good thing to have the revenue guidance under one standard rather than to run around and try to, you know, hunt and peck and find it under 200 separate pieces of literature, so I think that's a positive. But certainly more judgment as companies consider contingent revenue and how that, you know, turns into revenue recognition. When you have multiple element arrangements, how do you split up that revenue? So there will be more judgment there. Again, not a bad thing, but the system will need to adapt to that. Financial statement presentation. The thing that I hear when I'm out visiting with companies is there's a lot of noise in the system, a lot of tension around the direct method of presenting cash flows and the cost that will be associated with that versus the benefits to investors. So that's getting a lot of attention. But certainly, in terms of implementation, that will require time, effort, and cost to get things in place to make that happen. So as you think about the implementation and you go beyond the accounting, these standards are just so pervasive, they will affect how a company contracts with employees, contracts with banks, you know, debt covenants, you know, how you do business with your customers. You know, if you had previously leased to your customers, your customer may have a different idea about how they want to do business going forward. So there's just a number of things that will happen that will change fundamentally so many things around how a company does business and how they do things internally, and certainly their internal controls that will need time, you know, for them to adapt, and certainly will affect, you know, the audit of these audits of these companies. And again, not that this is a bad thing, but you know, there needs to be an appropriate amount of time for the system to adapt. So in terms of what this means in terms of considerations, both to the FASB and the PCAOB, for the FASB, I similar to Jamie, commend the FASB for exposing separately the adoption and transition. I think that'll be very instructive in terms of, you know, what people believe is doable. I would certainly think about, you know, extended adoption periods given the breadth, the complexity, and volume of the standard setting. So enough time for the system to manage that. Also, there's certainly benefits of comparability in going retrospective versus prospective. But, you know, I think that the cost needs to be weighed as well and consider prospective application to the extent that can be done. I think that'll take some of the tension out. For the PCAOB, similar to Jamie, I think that it's critical, Marty, and I know you have a process for being connected to the FASB, and I imagine this is putting a little bit of stress on your team in managing through and commenting on so many standards in such a short period of time. But if there was ever a time that it was important to really be connected on a real-time basis with the FASB, certainly now is that time. And similar to Jamie's remarks around business judgment, you know, there's the business judgment framework that the Committee to Improve Financial Reporting released. It never turned into anything at the SEC, but I think it's generally a pretty good model as I think about making accounting judgments. And so I think that's something for preparers to think about as we move to greater and greater judgment. And I would also agree that, you know, that will certainly drive more judgment in auditing. And maybe in the longer term, we need to think about an auditor's judgment framework and what it means in terms of making judgments within a reasonable range of judgments, recognizing that just because something's judgmental doesn't mean every judgment's right. And so driving quality through a framework that auditors can use as practical guidance. So, again, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Larry, Jamie, and Mike, very much for your comments. I think, as everybody can see, the from these comments that there's a tremendous challenge for financial reporting in front of us, and therefore inherently there's a tremendous challenge for auditors, which goes right to the heart of the PCAOB and our responsibilities and the input of this group, the SAG. I don't think I need to make too many more comments to open it up to the floor, but clearly we are working on these standards, and we'll be looking at all of them with respect to issues on auditability. As Larry mentioned, many of them go into a much more principles-based type approach, and in many areas, judgment is increased greatly. So we'll have to look at our existing standards and how they work vis-a-vis these new accounting standards, and also overall auditability issues that might arise from all of this, as well as the quality that can go into audits with compressed timeframes and all of that. So maybe the quality control standards have to be addressed as well at the PCAOB. But I think with let me not take up any time. I'm sure many have comments here, so let me open it up to the floor for your views on the impact of all of this on auditors, the auditing profession, and the PCAOB. Schroeder.
This is a question about to both Jamie and to Mike. You made comments about timing, cycles, and a few other things. And I'm going to tie this together with another comment that a senior partner from one of the larger firms made to me a couple months ago, that they did not feel that, he felt that maybe 10% of their audit staff was qualified to really do the assessments of fair value. So I sit here in with a quandary. I'm a strong believer, to use Larry's terms, I'm probably a zealot on the fair value side, but recognize there's a deep end and a shallow end of the pool from an investor standpoint. The shallow end of the pool is a safe cost accounting. We all kind of can agree to what we paid for something. And the deep end of the pool for the expert swimmers is more the fair value, and it's used in a different way, and it gets prepared in a different way and on a different cycle. So, Jamie, to your question about cycle, have we, in effect, moved the cycle of reporting post the end of each quarter too far up? Have we gotten too short a time frame? Alcoa came out and reported on Monday. The banks are reporting. J.P. Morgan reported today. Citi tomorrow. They're all doing it somehow. Have we gotten too short of a cycle? And would you see this standard lengthening out the cycle time? First question.
I guess the question of have we moved the time frame up too far, I think that's really a question for investors and users of financial statements. You know, one of the common themes we hear in standard setting as well as in practices, we want more sooner, right? So, I guess I'm not in a position to really opine on that. I think we try to get information to investors as timely as we can and provide it in a compliant way. You know, to your question of, how can we really ingrain this in, and will this lengthen the closing cycle? I think there's no question that incorporating some of these concepts into, the guts of the ledgers and subledgers, and preparing a fair value and doing accounting at that level, at the instrument level, there's no question that that will lengthen closing cycles for some period of time. I think there's so many interpretive issues that are going to have to be thought through, and actually developing what the policies and the control frameworks are to ensure that, for example, when you're determining the fair value of a loan with certain characteristics in a certain market at the loan level, that you're providing, the right framework for people to just routinely make that decision, right? You don't want to, as a company, I don't want people to have free latitude on every single item to go out and just do what they think is right, because I'll get a lot of inconsistency in that process. So we have to go through a process of really, ingraining the process down to the right level. But as we start to exercise those new muscles and really think differently about fair value versus amortized cost, I just think it's going to take a while to absorb that. And there's just no question that to get it right, you have to not only be able to account for it, but you have to analyze it. And analyzing the data, I think, for investors, for companies, for boards, and for others, I just think that's going to take a while to digest as well. I mean, it's going to be, some of the results are going to be really counterintuitive for people. When you think about fair value accounting for deposits and for liabilities and incorporating credit spreads and other things, it's just going to take a while. So to me, that gets into this question of transition timelines, right? which is, you know, how much time is appropriate to allow parallel processing and for the absorption before you actually
It, it seems like in other countries, you know, like Canada, their banking cycle is significantly after the U.S.'s. European banks are even further behind. It seems like investors could adopt if they're getting better quality information. So I, you know, I think the cycles are important. Clearly recognize the issue, but may be able to expand that out. Mike, on the judgment side, clearly auditors will have to use a lot of more judgment, and they may not all be up to speed on what the issues are at this point in time. If instead of doing the single column balance sheet that is proposed by the FASB, if it were to be a side-by-side balance sheet of cost in one column and fair value in the other, would that give the auditors some degree of comfort or safety in that to say, okay, we nailed the cost side. We nailed that column. Fair value, you know, it's an estimate, guys. Will that give you some cover over time?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think the answer is no, because I think we will be held accountable. If you do a side-by-side, there's going to be accountability for both. Not to say that an estimate of fair value is always, you know, a single-point number. There is a range of numbers that you could agree that, you know, is a reasonable range. But, you know, how you come up with that, how management comes up with that range, and how an auditor audits that range, you know, still has to be, you know, notwithstanding the fact that you may have side-by-side with amortized cost, I think there will be accountability and should be accountability for auditing that fair value number as well.
I would just add one comment, and I'll yield to someone else. The, you know, we're certainly held accountable every single day to be able to fair value our assets and liabilities. And our investors expect us to be able to do that. And there are a range of companies that can do it on any given day. I'm just wondering if we're not making the same argument that the banks made in the 1980s, late 80s, when they were doing risk-based capital, and they only had to divide their balance sheet into four different categories and apply a percentage to each of the four categories. And they, oh, my gosh, that's really, really hard to do. Well, today, 14,000 of those, or half of those 14,000 banks are gone. And maybe what we're saying is that maybe the companies are not sophisticated enough to actually do and exist in today's business. So just close with that one comment.
Thanks, Hal. Tom, did you want to, Linzire, did you want to respond to that dialogue, or do you have a separate point?
I have a separate point.
All right. Well, then in order, Wayne Collins.
Probably heard the word challenge more today than in the last year or so. And recognizing that each of the standards presents its own set of challenges, but that there was one common theme that I think underpinned each one of those was that on a professional judgment framework, which could be applied. Now, recognizing that this is really, number one, it's a preparer issue first because it's management's financial statement. So I see either FASB or SEC coming up with a professional judgment framework, much like CIFR had recommended, and I think a very similar framework could be done from an auditing perspective. This was discussed at length at the last IFER meeting in London with the working group. It's not the first time that it's been mentioned, but it sounds like it's really time for something like that to be seriously considered because it will be the foundation for making the judgments in each one of these standards.
Thanks, Wayne. Kevin Riley?
Marty, it's almost the same comment that Wayne's raising, and that is I can't think of a more important time now to have a judgment framework, not only for preparers, but for auditors. Because otherwise, my fear is we're going to suffer death by a thousand cuts, trying to go through standard by standard in terms of what it means to the auditors, when the bigger picture, I think, is quite clear. Larry articulated it well, more judgment required. Mike touched on it. Jamie touched on the need for a judgment framework. And I think there's just a crying need for, as a first step, to move in that direction. First, Larry, from a preparer's perspective, you know, doing away with 200 pieces of specific guidance could leave a void. And without thinking regarding how you apply judgment in the application of a more principles-based world will lead to a lot of difficulties from a preparer's perspective. And then, Marty, I think from an auditing perspective, we need to follow right along with that in terms of bigger picture application of judgment by auditors to cover a variety of more principled-based standards.
I hear you. Barbara Roper?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just say, I mean, this strikes me as completely nuts. When you started, in your comments, Larry, you talked about three factors that it's important for FASB to consider: the independence of the process, improving the quality of U.S. accounting, and convergence. And it strikes me that really the second one of that is the only priority that matters. Independent process is very important, but it's process as a means towards an end. Convergence is only a good idea if it either promotes an improved quality of accounting in the U.S. or at least doesn't undermine it. And so we seem to be finding ourselves in a situation in which this third priority of convergence, and convergence under what strikes me as just an absolutely arbitrary time deadline, is being allowed to undermine these other two priorities. And through no fault of FASB's, I mean, you didn't create the schedule, but it seems to me that someone sort of needs to be the grown-up in the room and stands up and says, look, this has got to stop. It's not working. You can't do this fast. We haven't even really considered whether it's, you know, this adoption of IFRS, you know, isn't altogether a good idea. It's not something that was advocated by investors or users of financial statements for the most part. And so then we have this conversation. We end up saying, okay, well, we're going to go towards more principles-based standard, also something not advocated by investors or users of financial statements. They require greater judgments. So if we're going to have greater judgments, then the issuers and the auditors want this judgment framework, which gives them some degree of comfort that they're not going to be second-guessed on their judgments. Well, nobody second-guesses reasonable judgments. We second-guess unreasonable judgments, which we recognize the minute everything is blown up in our face. And I just, to me, it's like we're sitting here in this room talking about the topic that is going to be the source of the next round of huge accounting scandals, and I just think it's a mess.
Well, I think we heard that comment clearly. So I noticed, Larry, you put your card up during Barbara's comment, so maybe you might be responding to that.
Well, I appreciate your comments. And it is nuts in a certain sense, because we as board members talk about it among ourselves all the time as to, you know, how to do the business of the FASB in this environment, okay? And there's various different pressures on us. You know, if you read the international press, you know, it's the slow laggard FASB that can't get anything done, whereas the IASB is just moving forward, just nice, which I would debate that since they've only issued 9 standards in 9 years, but that's besides the point. In terms of someone needs to be the grown-up in the room, okay, that's when I put my thing up. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, we are doing our best to manage in an environment where there's conflicting pressures, okay? You know, the U.S. Treasury wants us to converge. All right? Let me finish. The SEC, I think, has been very reasonable in their comments to say that, look, we're going to look at your progress on MOU projects, but we're not making the decision based upon you issuing all standards by June 2011. Okay? I think they've been extremely reasonable. We hold a unique position in the standard-setting world by being invited to the table to deliberate with the IASB. There is no other standard setter in the world that has that position, and we're doing our best to manage that. But at the same time, and the only reason why I put this up is to reiterate that if at the end of the day we don't think that, A, we've gotten robust comments from our constituents in response to exposure drafts, and or we have not had the time to consider what those comments are. And I can speak on behalf of all board members, I believe, to say that we will not vote for a standard. At least I know I will not vote for a standard. And I appreciate the comments of Mike and Jamie in terms of the pressure that this has put on the system. And we're hearing those. We are issuing. I'm so glad you mentioned the fact that we're issuing a separate exposure draft or exposure document on transition unto itself. And we are just doing our best to operate in a world that we don't know what the future is. We don't know what the SEC is going to do, you know.
Can I just, one clarifying point. I made that comment, probably not well chosen, but I was not referring to the FASB. I didn't
take it that way.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't take it that way. All I'm trying to say is that, you know, I think we are trying to work as reasonably as we can. To the extent that you still think it's unreasonable, you know, I applaud PwC for putting out their point of view, you know, document a couple of days ago. You know, I mean, we took a crack at it. They don't think it's enough, and you know, we'll caucus and figure out how to deal with that. But it's not, you know, sometimes it's like the United Nations. It's not easy dealing in an international U.S. framework and trying to come up with something that's satisfactory to everybody. It's really kind of unique and frustrating sometimes.
Tom?
Let me build on that a little bit. The stated reasons for the deadline, and I don't view it as a deadline, but the stated reasons as a deadline is turnover at the ISB, and it's countries adopting in 2011 and 12. I don't believe either of those are credible. Okay. I believe the reason there's a 2011 target date deadline is political. And we have to understand, Larry brought up good points, we're living in a political world. And joining the conversation is a privilege. But some of the it is political. The ISB has made commitments to get things done by 2011. That is why we're on the path. Because the turnover of the board's not a legitimate reason. If you're a legitimate board, boards turn over. And they have to be able to go on. The 2011 and 12 deadline of countries adopting is not a legitimate reason. Now, because if you're adopting in 11 or 12, you've got to have comparative financial statements. That means you need the standards now. And they're not done. And they won't be done until next year. Neither of those are credible reasons. It's political reasons why we're under the pressure that we're under. And I appreciate the kudos of the panel about the quality of our efforts and the stated quality of the EDs and the due process. But I just want to make clear, it is going to be challenged, and it is being challenged. Right now, the ISB feels they need to get insurance out by June 30th, 2011. Getting a standard done in 11 months when the ED is not out there is a pretty challenging issue. But we've raised a very significant issue that companies that are providing health insurance to their employees will be scoped into that ED. And we've not deliberated the implications of that. We've raised it, and the answer is we've got to get done by June 30th, 2011. We're going to send the ED out. So, you know, we've got – all of us ought to be very diligent in monitoring whether or not really the quality of what is being issued is there and whether or not, with the pressures that are political, we can survive or thrive and end up having quality standards with compressed – due process. If the deadlines for comment letters are in September, October, November, and we need to be done by June 30th, 2011, and it takes at least a month or two to process a standard, you do the math as part, in terms of the time period that we're projecting for redeliberations amongst these very, very challenging, difficult topics. And so your input to us was very critical for us to stand up and say we had a stagger. It was the FASB that said, no, we've got a stagger. And so we all have to monitor that because our system is different than perhaps the system where other standards are being issued in the world if we're concerned about the outcome.
Thanks, Tom. Jeanette Franzel?
As an auditor, when I hear preparers saying that, you know, the closing cycles are going to be lengthened and capacity is going to be stretched, you know, audit risk just immediately goes up in my mind, especially when we're dealing with such complex areas like this. And we've had an interesting experience over the last year at the GAO, slightly different. We didn't have new standards. We had completely new transactions. We are the auditor of record for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, as well as the FDIC. So we had brand new financial transactions, never done before, that had to be run through valuation models and had to be audited. And for the FDIC, it involved loss arrangements and agreements with banks. And for the TARP, it involved, well, as you all know, all kinds of transactions with banks, auto companies, et cetera, AIG. And Treasury, it was a heroic effort on the part of the Treasury and the FDIC and the GAO. And I just, when I think about capacity, and there have been comments here about capacity in the system, that's where risk is just really, really going to increase. So just listening to this and knowing what we just went through and the Treasury and the FDIC, I think that this is going to introduce a tremendous amount of risk to both the financial reporting and the auditing of these transactions, especially in these companies, especially if it's all happening at once. The capacity issue, I think, is very serious for individual companies as well as audit firms. The U.S. Treasury was able to pull top talent from across the government, throw it onto the TARP. Well, if everybody's trying to do that at once out in the system, you know, the system isn't going to be able to support that. We at GAO were able to do the same, pull a lot of talent together, and do some very specific targeted hiring. But again, if everybody's trying to do that, I don't know where the capacity is going to come from. So I think our experience just on those two audits might give some insight into the risk that might be present in all of this implementation. But secondly, where's the capacity going to come from?
Jeanette, those are very good comments, and I appreciate the analogy you're making. It's for that reason that we put this on the agenda today, because of the heightened audit risk that we saw here at the PCAOB, and therefore to start a dialogue with SAG members about, you know, assuming this timetable stays in place and all this change takes place, what do we do from a standard setting and so forth at the PCAOB to address this audit risk? So we appreciate those points, and that's exactly what we're trying to address here today.
Yeah, and let me also add that in both of those cases, the standard audit timeframes were not met. Both from the preparer's side and the auditor's side, we all agreed that everybody needed more time. So for the TARP, normally at the federal audit cycle is 45 days after year end. So the TARP, Treasury took an extra 30 days. And for FDIC, I think that cycle went almost 6 months after year end before FDIC could put together the financial statements and we could adequately audit them. So we also use time frames to sort of help us absorb and take care of some of these issues.
Thank you. Lynn Turner?
Perhaps we should have started the session with a prayer. Listening to the three of you, and especially Jamie, I think this is a train wreck that's going to happen. I don't think it's waiting to happen. I think it's a train wreck starting to occur right now. I think the FASB would be well advised to turn around and drop the deadline, period. The reasons that Tom laid out are not good reasons, and yet I know that Larry is absolutely right with respect to Treasury and the politics of Treasury, but someone has to be the parent here and stand up and say, we're just not going there. And the problem about this whole conversation is there's none of it that's got back to the main objective here, and that is this whole thing will only work if at the end of the day we end up with accurate financial statements with the necessary information in them going to investors so that they can make the right decisions. If we end up with all of this at the end of the day with financial statements that don't do that, either because the standards don't get us the right information or the auditors, for whatever reason, don't do a quality audit, it won't matter what intentions are, Larry. You can have the best of intentions and be well-meaning, but if the reality diverts from that and we end up with problems in these financial statements, no one's going to care what people's intentions are. No one's going to care about anything other than the outcome, because we're going to have a lot of people losing money. And the fact that Canada or someone else is going to IFRS shouldn't matter. The fact, the reality is, half of the capital market capitalization is in this country. And we shouldn't be having to tell the dog where to go. And yet that's exactly what's happening here. And you listen to this conversation, and Barb is right. It is absolutely nuts. Anyone in their right mind, you could take a six-year-old and put them in this room and have them listen to this conversation, and they'd be looking for, where's the adult? It is absolutely simply unbelievable. And when we talk about, well, we're slowing it down to just four major standards per quarter, we haven't been doing four major standards per year. There is no way for people to provide meaningful comment. There is no way for these standards to be adequately tested to see if they're doing right. And quite frankly, the SEC needs to stand up and be the parent here and tell Treasury and others back off and give FASB the flexibility to go do the job they need to go do. And unfortunately, I don't get the sense that this commission, as it has in the past, has stood up and played the role of the parent. And they need to do it, and they need to do it now. And we need to make sure these are good standards, that they get tested, and that Jamie and others then have the chance to put the systems in place, once they're tested, to turn around and implement them. And God bless the FASB, because they're taking on some great standards. We've all known leases have been broken for, you know, almost four decades now. One might ask, why now? What's the rush? You know? But they do need to be done. And, you know, some of this stuff is going to be different. My sense is the FASB is trying to get to the true economics, which will get us better information. Some of the fair valuation stuff, as Hal and all said. But it needs to be tested to see if it will work. And the fact that someone says, well, there's more judgment, that's, who, you know, there's a lot of judgment now. I don't know if there's going to be any more judgment than what we already have. Everyone's supposedly already auditing those footnotes with all the fair value in them, including all the big four. There may be some question about that. But so it's not supposedly all that much new. But yet we need to make sure that it turns around and works. And if we need a judgment framework, provided it's not a framework for trying to create a safe harbor or limit litigation if people make poor decisions, then so be it. We need to take the time to go through that process, and certainly should be doing it both from an auditor and a preparer perspective, as some people have said. But what we can have it is a safe harbor or something that turns around and says bad judgments get excluded out, because quite frankly, investors get no break from bad judgments. And so we need to make sure that that whole system works. And I think that's going to take some time, and that no one's actually picked up a pen and really start to develop that standard yet for either a Jamie, who's going to have to go through this process and wants to make sure she's gone through a reasonable process, or for Mike, who's also going to be held accountable. And the fact we haven't even picked that pen up and started writing it tells us this deadline is for absolutely all the wrong reasons, including politics. And when people start telling me the reason we're doing this accounting is for politics, the one thing I know, and I can guarantee it, is we're going to have a bad answer, we're going to have a train wreck, and everyone in this room knows it, and we'll have no one to look at but the person in the mirror, because no one stood up as a parent and said, time out here. And someone certainly needs to do that, and I think the SEC needs to turn around and play that role. As far as bringing it back to the auditing, then I think you've got to do some auditing standards here around the judgment stuff. The current standard we have is good, but it doesn't go far enough. And quite frankly, where we've had our discrepancies and problems in judgments is there wasn't the type of guidance that says, okay, as a preparer, you got to document it. You got to lay out your assumptions, and then here's what we expect the auditor to do that. That all needs to get laid out. And that first piece with the preparer, quite frankly, there's a question about whether that should be SEC or FASB. Someone needs to make that decision and then go into rulemaking and get that on place so that the auditors know where they need to go to get that. But that whole piece of it, no one's even picked up a pen. So how can we say we got a deadline in 2011? So Larry and Tom, I'd urge you to take that time frame, get rid of it. People are always going to perceive if this thing blows up that you guys put the artificial time frame in place, and ultimately you guys did do it. You had the ability to say no. The SEC had the ability to say no. And if you leave it in place, there will be no excuses, because ultimately it was you that decided and you decided to issue the standards. And there'll be no excuses at that point in time. And unfortunately, if this blows up on investors, given the amount of money that we're talking about, you know, it will be difficult to say, why should we keep the organization around? That's all I got to say.
Lynn, I appreciate you turned the comment around toward the end of that as to the implication on auditors and our need to address the standards and judgment framework. I just have to remind everybody here that I promised Larry when inviting him to this session that we wanted to talk at the SAG about the audit implications. Let's accept for the time frame that this is a timetable that's going to take place, and if it does, what we all as audit overseers, what we have to be doing in terms of addressing audit risk, and what we have to do in terms of addressing audit standards. And I promised Larry that the session was not going to turn into a debate as to the standards themselves.
But Lynn didn't address the standards. He's addressing the process and the timing, et cetera. And you know, maybe you don't want to delve into it, but I welcome those comments because, you know, we need feedback. And we've had a lot of discussions within the organization, including ourselves, our trustees, the SEC, et cetera. And in fact, we had meetings prior to this June 2nd press release in terms of the staging. But to the extent that, and I understand what you're saying, Lynn, okay? I do understand. And at the end of the day, you're correct. We're the ones that vote for these standards, so therefore the responsibility is with us. So I appreciate those comments.
I would tell Marty, I don't accept that deadline, and I think anyone that accepts that deadline is a fool and setting themselves up for a big problem.
Lynn, our board has never accepted the deadline. There's only been one board that's ever used the word deadline. For us, it's always been a target in a process, and I assure you we take that wholehearted to heart, and we will not accept a deadline if it leads to poor results. But I want to go back to Marty's point. I think despite all this, even if we didn't have all of this, this topic today is very important. Whether we're coming out with multiple standards at a time or not, our comment letter process is one that does not involve auditing implications. And we do not get audit input in the process. Even from the audit firms, it's mostly technical accounting stuff. And so it's useful to begin to think about how the two organizations can interrelate, and if you're going to establish and implement good, high-quality standards, how the auditing issues can surface in the process, not an after fact. We get done, we finalize, then the PCAOB considers. It would be far better for us to be able to find a way to think about that together. And it might not be standard by standard. And judgments aren't just arising in the reporting model with these new standards. I assure you there's a lot of judgments already. And some of them have been called into question over time. So thinking about how we can do better between the two organizations is a very, very good thing. And so just maybe we don't have to be in the bitch fest of the current process and think together as to how to make that work.
That's extremely important, that point, that we as audit standard setters and assessing audit risk are intimately involved in this process, and that's why we're having this session today. Charlie Niemeyer, I saw you put your card up during that.
Yeah, just very quickly, Tom, just wanted to just acknowledge that your invitation and comments about considering the auditability of the accounting standards. Some of us have been concerned about that for some time, and I really appreciate your interest in that regard, and we will certainly take you up on that. Thank you.